Hello and welcome to Around and About Chattanooga. I am your host, Michael Edward Miller. We're having a very special edition of Around and About right now because the celebration of Southern literature is taking place right now in Chattanooga. It's happening today, tomorrow, and on Saturday. Katori Hall joins us for this interview. She's in Chattanooga as part of the celebration of Southern literature. Katori Hall is a playwright. She's a member of the Fellowship of Southern Writers, and she's won numerous awards. Katori, welcome to Around and About Chattanooga.
Thanks for having me.
Your play, The Mountaintop, I think it's a very well-known play, although I don't know if it's actually been performed here in Chattanooga or not, but it was on Broadway, starring Samuel L. Jackson and Angela Bassett. Sam Jackson played Martin Luther King Jr., and NPR actually said when the play opened, it was probably the most anticipated play opening that season. What was your take on MLK? What was all this buzz about in this play, The Mountaintop?
Well, The Mountaintop focuses on the last night of Dr. King. It's right after he's given the I've Been to the Mountaintop speech, set in the Lorraine Motel. It follows him coming inside, asking for a pack of cigarettes from Ralph Abernathy, you know, settling in for the night because he's working on this speech, Why America is Going to Hell, which supposedly was the last speech he was working on.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, he orders a cup of coffee, and this wonderful, beautiful hotel maid named Camay comes up and delivers him this cup of coffee, but a cup of consciousness as well, because over the course of that night, she confronts him, she challenges him, he's challenged.
I heard you was preaching everybody the same. Negro folk, white folk, we all alike.
Well, at the most human level, we are all the same.
What? One thing we all got in common.
We scared, Cammy. We all scared. We're scared of each other, scared of ourselves. They just scared. Scared of losing something they've known their whole lives. Fear.
He's provoked, and he really comes to terms with pending mortality. So it really goes into the warts and all king. It's not the I have a dream king. This is a radical king. This is a king who has stinky feet and fears and jumps at the sound of thunder. This is a king who is, you know, just working so hard to finish all the work that he's done, but knowing that, you know, outside that door, there's something coming for him.
And those are pretty much the only two characters in the play, right?
Yeah.
Martin Luther King and the maid. So why did you invent this fictitious maid for King to kind of unload his thoughts on?
Well, it was actually inspired by my mother. My mother told me the story of how when she wanted to hear Dr. King speak at Mason Temple on April 3rd about the fact that, you know, her mother told her that she couldn't go. And so there was like this rumor, this feeling that somebody was out to get Dr. King. As a matter of fact, her mother said, you know, somebody out to bomb that church, somebody out to get that man. So you need to sit your butt down because you ain't going nowhere.
Oh, so she missed the chance.
So she missed this. She missed this opportunity.
Oh.
And so, you know, I was like, well, if my mother was afraid to go to the church, and if people were afraid to go to the church, then he must have really been afraid to go
yes.
to the church. And so, you know, this female character is actually named after my mother.
Oh, Cat wow.
May is a truncation of Carrie May. You know how down here we be like, oh,
yeah.
That's Cat May. So that's how Cat May came to be. It was in a way to put my mother in the room with King because she didn't get an opportunity to hear him that night on April 3rd, 1968.
So when you're writing this play, how much of it are you trying to base on historical fact, things we definitely know, versus maybe just your own ideas, your own conjectures about what he would be like, as you said, just kind of as a normal human being?
It's interesting. I knew that I will never know. Most of us will never know what happened that last night. Even people who were close to him, they didn't know what was going on inside of his head. And so I just had this, I don't know, call it naivete or bravery or both. I just like, you know what, I don't have to, you know, stick to the script, so to speak. As a matter of fact, you know, I think the FBI won't release all of the all of their information about King until like 2027. And so,
oh, wow.
Yeah, so we got a long time
yes.
for us to know, you know, what really, truly happened, not only that night, but other nights. And so I just felt like, you know, this doesn't have to be, you know, a very direct, you know, true representation of history. This is not this huge docudrama. You know, I went the fantastical route, the magical route, even the supernatural, spiritual route, because this is a reverend, this is a preacher man, and so, you know, to look at it through, you know, that that realm, I thought was that lens was very was much more interesting for me because it just heightened the theatricality that you can bring to the stage.
Having your play on Broadway, having these huge actors like Sam Jackson and Angela Bassett starring in it, that's pretty impressive, but you've actually got a very impressive background in theater already, including training at Harvard and Juilliard. Tell me about your background.
Well, you know, I started off as an actor. A lot of people don't know that about me. And even before that, I thought I was going to be a journalist. I was one of those like crazy people who was like, I don't know what I'm going to do, so I'm going to try out everything. And acting was like the perfect thing because you get to act like you're every other person in the world. And so I really feel as though my background in acting and having that particular education really prepared me for the playwriting world because you learn about theater and the way a scene is stacked and about dialogue from the inside because you have to memorize the lines. You have to memorize the structure of a play. I kind of feel like that was the best playwriting school I could have ever went to was like acting school over at ART at Harvard. And so, you know, I was writing simultaneously while I was acting. I graduated around 2005, moved back to New York because I had went to Columbia there for undergrad. So I moved back after grad school, did my Law and Order here, my Law and Order there. I like played a woman who thought she was abducted by aliens, like crazy stuff. And, you know, I was still writing at the same time. And eventually I was able to get my first play, Who Do Love, produced at Cherry Lane Theater in New York City. I was mentored by an amazing playwright, Lynn Nottage, Pulitzer Prize-winning playwright, and who's become a great friend of mine, a great mentor. And it just kind of evolved from there. And as a matter of fact, Mountaintop became my second play to be produced in America. Who Do Love was produced in 2007, and then Mountaintop, I think, was produced in 2011 in America. It was produced in London first.
You grew up in Memphis. Tell me about growing up in Memphis. Were there things going on in your childhood that kind of planted the seeds for this career in theater, playwriting, writing?
You know, my family, they're just drama kings and queens. And so I would just watch them at the kitchen table acting out, you know, the plays of their life. This the real things that they were going through. They would share with the entire family. And so, you know, even at a young age, this idea of coming into the kitchen and sharing stories and having your audience and then, you know, having your spotlight was very much a part of the what I grew up in.
And one of your plays, I believe, is set in Memphis. It's about a housing project in Memphis?
Yes, that play, Hurt Village, is about a housing project that was demolished in Memphis in 2002. And it basically follows a family on the eve of the demolition. And the grandson, Buggy, actually ends up coming back home from fighting in the war in Iraq. And it's really about how he tries to reconnect with this community, reconnect with his family before everything is torn apart.
If you're just joining us, I'm talking to Katori Hall. She's a playwright, writer from Memphis, here for the Celebration of Southern Literature, taking place here in Chattanooga at the Tivoli today, tomorrow, and on Saturday. You wrote a play, Children of Killers, mm-hmm. that's set in Rwanda about young boys who are meeting their fathers for the first time. The fathers are in jail because they were part of the genocide in Rwanda. These fathers were killers, and the boys in the play are bragging about how many murders their fathers committed. It sounds like such a grim concept for a play. What's going on? Why did you decide to write that?
Well, I went to Rwanda for the first time in 2009. It was actually right after Mountaintop opened in London, and I was ready to write outside of myself. I was ready to start exploring the world beyond Memphis, beyond the South. And so I was on this annual trip that a playwright named Eric N. takes students on every year. He basically has been teaching students, theater students, about genocide and there's a genocide conference and he teaches us how to use the medium of theater to explore a very, very hard subject. And so when I was there, I didn't even know what I wanted to write about. I just knew that the story of the 1994 genocide in Rwanda was huge and big and complicated. And I didn't even know where to start. One day we ended up meeting an association that was in a village, and it was a mixture of perpetrators and survivors and victims of the genocide. And there was this man who came up the hill, and he came to shake all the hands of all the members in the association. And there was this one woman who didn't want to shake his hand. I later learned that he had participated in the killings of her family.
Oh, wow.
And so I started visualizing and imagining, you know, what the process was to bring him back into the community, and the fact that there was so much subtext of anger and depression that this community was dealing with, and the entire country. And so that, you know, provided the impetus for me to start thinking about Children of Killers, like, you know, how the offspring of this man, I imagine, how did they feel, you know, waiting for their father to come home? And when he did come home, like, what was that transition period like? Was there talk about what the father did? Did they feel as though what the father did was passed down to them in some way, like via genetics or whatever? So it just, you know, provided a huge playground for me to just really delve into that particular story in a very interesting way, in a way that was very personal, in a way that was inspired by something that I actually saw and observed.
Did you actually get to talk to any of the children while you were there in Rwanda? Did you get to base any of your dialogue maybe on real things you heard?
You know, because it was my first time, you know, it was very hard for people to be very open with me about what had happened to them or what had happened to their families during the genocide. I eventually did cultivate strong relationships with people where they would tell me little things, or they would tell me how they felt about present-day Rwanda, this feeling of they still felt in danger, or the feeling of it wasn't over yet, or the feeling of hope as well. It was like a mixture of all of these things. And so having the blessing of talking to them really provided, you know, just an amazing fodder for that particular play.
You're a member of the Fellowship of Southern Writers. That's an organization based here in Chattanooga. Some of the members, some of the people who are members or have been members, Eudora Welty, Ralph Ellison, Roy Blunt Jr., James Dickey, and many other just huge names in Southern
yes.
literature. The archives for this organization are right here at the University of Tennessee at Chattanooga. How did you join the group? How did you become part of this?
Well, I initially was introduced to the group in 2007 when I won the Bryan Family Drama Award. And I didn't even know about this fellowship. I was like, oh my gosh, a fellowship for Southern writers, what? I was just, you know, so excited to know that they were actually existing in my hometown state,
yeah.
or my home state. And I was asked to be inducted about 2 years later. So I think it was in 2009. Oh, no. It was in 2011 I was inducted into the fellowship, 2011, right before Mountaintop even opened. And so it was just, you know, I was a little overwhelmed that I was like, it's like Natasha Trethewey and then and Roy Blunt Jr. Like, you get a little like, oh, my God, why? I'm too young to be a part of this amazing literary circle. But, you know, it's about passing down that baton and widening the circle. And I think the fellowship in itself is becoming more and more diverse as the years roll on by. And that's what Southern writing is nowadays. You know, growing up, you were just like, oh, it's just the white people, you know, as a young
yes.
black woman growing up in Memphis, Tennessee, you're assigned particular books and you're like, oh, you know, if I read Tennessee Williams one more time, I'm going to shoot myself in the head. But now it's expanding. It's embracing all different types of Southern voices. And I think that's very important.
What do you all talk about when you get together? It seems like you all would just have
the
most
drink.
Amazing.
What you talking about? This is our drinking time. No, of course. It's funny. We actually don't talk about work. We give each other a lot of support, a lot of pats on the back, because writing is hard. It's a very hard profession, a very lonely profession. And so, you know, to have an opportunity to, you know, rub shoulders with amazing writers, it's just, you know, it's a kind of downtime for us, even though, of course, we're talking about our process and letting people in on our process. But for us, you know, behind the scenes, there's a lot of drinking.
You're taking place in a panel discussion here during the celebration of Southern literature with Roy Blunt Jr., Maurice Manning, and Jane Ann Phillips, called What is Southern These Days? Why do you think that's even a question? And I think you hit on that a little bit when you're talking
yeah.
about it becoming more diverse. People are questioning what Southern is or maybe should be.
Yeah, I think there's definitely this assumption of the South that it's just white and black and that the Civil War is not over yet.
Right,
you
right.
Know, particularly, you know, going up north, people just, you know, they're like, oh, there's Vietnamese people in Tennessee. It's like, yeah. And one of them happened to be my best friend growing up. So this whole idea that there is a, I hate to use this term, a New South. I don't think New South is quite correct, but a changing South, a more inclusive South, I think, is what is occurring right before our very eyes. And obviously things are being challenged in terms of, you know, I would even say gay rights in, yes. in the South is something that I think is, you know, coming to the forefront in terms of our literary tradition. And that's what's happening. It's very, very exciting because I think the old stereotype of, you know, the Southern writer is this, you know, old boy, white boy, you know, drinking and smoking. And it's just not that's it's just not correct.
Who are some of your favorite Southern authors?
It's interesting. Mine go all over. It's like Tom Wolfe is one of my favorite writers. I love how he explodes language on the page. I would say Edward P. Jones is one of my favorite writers. I love Beth Henley. I felt so, you know, as a playwright, the fact that she was putting that our accent on stage, it was just so empowering to see Crimes of the Heart. I would say those are like my top three. And people are surprised that Tony Kushner actually, you know, grew up down here. And you know, he's part of like the New York, you know, playwriting literati. But he actually has Southern roots. So, and he's one of my favorite writers as well.
You, as a Southerner, someone who grew up in Memphis, what was it like for you moving to New York, being a Southerner in, you know, the quintessential northern town, New York City?
It's funny. It actually wasn't that hard because Memphis is a city. It's city country, but it's still a city. And so I felt, you know, I felt like I was cultured. I felt like, you know, I was a bit cosmopolitan. Maybe I was a little naive. I don't know, But the thing is, people in New York, no one's from there anyway. So I just felt like I was just joining all of the people who were flocking to New York to pursue their dreams. So it oddly wasn't a huge, huge change. Obviously, the accents are different. But in New York, you get a little confused. It's like, oh, my gosh, there's like 20 million accents going on here. You know, there's not one common denominator of an accent going on. But, yeah, for me, oddly, it was quite easy.
I've been looking online for, you know, some information about Southernness in general. I've lived here my whole life, but I'm trying to find out, you know, more than just my own personal experiences. I found out there are three universities, including the University of Mississippi, that offer degrees in Southern studies, studying Southern life, history, and culture. But I can't find anybody who offers a degree in Northern studies. I mean, what is it? Why is Southern culture like so weird or so unique that people actually want to study it as an academic discipline?
It's interesting. I think it has something to do with the food. I feel like, you know, in terms of American culture, you know, like something like Southern cuisine is like true American cuisine. Like this was something that was cultivated and created here. And I think it's like almost a metaphor of America. Like so much stuff started here and the our history and how we're trying to deconstruct it. It's almost like a society after a war. Like even though I was like saying, oh, the joking earlier, like, oh, the Civil War is not over yet. It actually kind of isn't.
Well, yeah.
And I think that's an intriguing society to study and to learn from. We are still a society in transition, even though we are part of the larger society of America. But there's just so much to study here, from the cuisine to the writing and to the way that we're living today.
Oh, yeah. Like I lived on Missionary Ridge here in Chattanooga, mm-hmm. which is where some heavy Civil War battles happen. And like there's still cannons and historical markers all over the place up there. And you live there for a while. You don't even notice it anymore. Mm-hmm. But then every once in a while, you'll find a tourist just like standing beside your
taking
yard staring at something.
On their iPhone.
And you're like, wow.
Yeah, the past is so present here. And I just think, obviously, you know, an academic, a scholar would want to walk around in this land because of that. That's what's going on.
If you're just joining us, I'm talking to Katori Hall. She's here for the celebration of Southern literature. It's being put on by the Southern Lit Alliance, and more information about it is at the southernlitalliance.org or southernlitalliance.org. It's happening tonight, happening tomorrow, and happening on Saturday at the Tivoli. You're taking place in a couple of discussions. We talked about one, what is Southern these days? Another one, you're doing dramatic scenes on stage and in the narrative. What does that even mean exactly? Dramatic scenes on stage and in the narrative.
I won't know till I get there. No, just kidding. You know, there's a difference. Obviously, with playwriting, dialogue is the focus when it comes to us creating conflict in our medium. You know, with prose, they can use, you know, both exposition and dialogue and a kind of poetic heightened language, you know. But for us, we just have to use dialogue as our tool. And I think, you know, that's a very interesting difference that is obvious between the two mediums. But, you know, there's so much overlap. I often find that some of the best, you know, books that I've read, best novels I've read, you know, have really great novel. They have really great dialogue, and they have really great scenes that I think could be like just plucked straight out of them and like put into a movie or put into a play. We're definitely cousins of each other, but there are very strong differences. The fact that with plays, you need an audience. Plays are stories of witness, whereas, you know, you got a novel, you can be by yourself off in the corner.
Thank you so much, Katori Hall. Again, southernlitalliance.org. That's where you can find more information on the celebration of Southern literature. You're here for it. There's dozens and dozens and dozens of other writers here for this conference, but it is open to readers as well. I think that's the big message that the organizers are trying to make sure people get is it's not just for writers. Fans can be there as well.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I'm so glad that we've dropped the word conference and made it celebration of Southern literature. I think that's very important. I don't want people to be scared and think that we're going to be all like hoity-toity and speaking all this kind of like academic craziness. And it's like, no, this is for everybody. You know, high schoolers can attend. As a matter of fact, I went to Signal Mountain High earlier today, and they were like, "We're coming, Miss Hall." I was like, "Yay!" So, you know, young and old, black and white, everyone is going to be there this weekend.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Around and About Chattanooga is a production of WUTC with contributions by the staff and volunteers of WUTC. Find us online at wutc.org.